Welcome to the Scotland Grows Show, the podcast partner of Scotland Grows magazine, where we celebrate Scottish gardening. I'm MT O'Donnell, publisher of Scotland Grows magazine, and your host for this adventure. We are delighted that this series of the Scotland Grows Show is sponsored by Roots, a subscription from National Trust for Scotland, which celebrates Scotland's flora in the form of a Roots pack sent to you every 6 weeks, containing Scottish seeds to grow at home for £6 a month. Sign up today at nts.org.uk/roots and use the code GROWS24 to receive an extra packet of seeds in your first delivery. We're launching Series 4 of the Scotland Grow Show with Helen Rushton, arguably Scotland's Queen of Snowdrops. Helen has a rural garden in Aberdeenshire with a snowdrop collection that extends to over 550 named varieties, all from a chance find of double snowdrops in the garden. The collection was awarded National Plant Collection status in 2020 by Plant Heritage, and you may have seen some of those gorgeous snowdrops on beech grove. The garden has won environmental awards and was the Gardener's World magazine Wildlife Garden and People's Choice Garden in 2017. Helen volunteers for Scotland's Garden Scheme as an area organiser and has opened her garden since 2008 and in the spring for snowdrops since 2014, so you can go and see these beauties in her fabulous space. Are you ready to fall in love with snowdrops in this episode? Helen, welcome to the Scotland Grow Show. I am delighted to have you here with us today because we're going to talk snowdrops, and I've been waiting to get you on at the right time of year.
Thanks very much for inviting me, MT. It's nice to be here.
Let's just dive straight in, Helen, and tell me a little bit about why you initially fell in love with snowdrops, because I would go so far as to say you're probably the queen of snowdrops in Scotland.
I can say that, but yeah, I do love snowdrops. Probably a bit obsessive about them. And it all started for me just by finding a chance clump of double snowdrops when we moved to our croft here in Aberdeenshire in 1991. Until that point, I had not picked up on snowdrops at all, didn't know they existed. And then when I found this little snowdrop, I thought, oh, that's a bit unusual. I'm sure they don't normally look like that. I just started looking around at gardening magazines. It wasn't the internet back then. It was all garden newspapers, garden magazines. And I saw quite a few were for sale. And I thought, oh, there's lots of them. I'll buy some of those. They look a bit different. Put them in the garden. They grew well. They did look different. Some of them were scented, like SR-Nut, the famous one for being scented. And I thought, oh, this is lovely. I'm going to look for a few more. And sadly, I'm a bit obsessive about them. And it just grew. I think it's because they're the first thing that pop up in the garden, not necessarily in the spring, they're sort of through the winter. And they're just everywhere around here. They're in under the hedgerows, they're in woodland, they're in farmers' fields, they're at the side of the road. Like I say, we found some in our own garden. And I thought, they lift your mood. When everything's been so dark and cold and miserable through the winter, those popping up just, they lift my mood. So I'm sure they probably do the same for a lot of other people too.
And your obsession with snowdrops, Helen, has gone a bit crazy, hasn't it? Here you have almost 600 different varieties in your garden.
We started off with a few and we realised there was different ones. It was fine while it was gardening magazines and newspapers because you had to, in those days, you had to fill out a paper form, send it away with a postal order or a cheque, and you'd get them maybe months later. But then the internet arrived at certain auction sites, and now you can just get in touch with anybody. You can send people emails. You can ask if anybody's got a certain snowdrop. And maybe it's too easy. Yeah, that's how we've picked up several hundred now. And of course, snowdrop people, people who grow snowdrops that love them as much as me, are also very generous. So we have received boxes of snowdrops in the post from people. We've also had snowdrops appear. Can I identify this? Is it something new? Would I like some? And so, yeah, it's growing every year. It grows a bit more.
And what about to the uninitiated then, to a listener who is thinking, snowdrops? I just thought they were little white things that popped up out in the wintertime, early springtime. How can you tell the difference between snowdrops if you're a complete novice?
First thing you probably notice with different snowdrops is the ones that you buy out of the magazines, you'll start noticing they have different species names. And so the ones that you've got growing in your garden are probably the common snowdrop or Nivalis. And you go into the gardening magazines and you'll see names like Alwesii or Wurrumwei, lots of different species names. And you buy those and you plant them in your garden. And the first thing you'll notice, they are so much bigger generally than the common Nivalis. And so you can definitely tell the difference. The flowers will be bigger, they'll stand taller, their leaves will be different, they'll be broader. Some are shiny green, bright green, some are like a sort of a glaucous colour. And so when you plant them alongside the common Nivalis, you'll see they are completely different.
And I guess for you, that then added to the obsession.
Well, that's it. I thought, as soon as I realised there were so many different species, that was another thing. I was like, I would like to have some of those and try those. And then I heard that some aren't necessarily hardy in Scotland. And I thought, well, I'll give them a go and see how they get on. And I've got a greenhouse here that I don't heat it and the door's always open, but it just gives that little bit of protection through the winter. So I try growing some of the less hardy ones there. Because, of course, they don't all come from sort of northern countries. A lot come from the Mediterranean and Greece. And so they aren't as hardy when you bring them back to Scotland and try growing them in your own garden. So sometimes you have to give them a little bit of protection, mostly from the wet. They're generally quite good with the cold, but as soon as you put them somewhere damp and boggy, they're not happy.
And I loved what you said there, Helen, about finding varieties which you're told won't grow well in Scotland. And like most people gardening in Scotland, we think, let's give it a go anyway.
Give it a go, definitely. We have had people come to the garden, and one of the driving forces for people coming and seeing the collection is they maybe have tried snowdrops in the past and they haven't grown for them. Generally in Scotland by the coast, where it's sandy and exposed, quite often snowdrops don't do terribly well there. So people have come and have suggested various species that might do well for them. And it's great the following year when they either come back again or they phone me or email me and say, those snowdrops you gave me, they grew, they worked. So it is good. I think there's a snowdrop for every location, really. It's just finding the right one.
And you probably have so many that you can obviously offer that kind of advice, because your collection grew into a national collection and you're now the holder of that national collection. So tell us a wee bit more about what that means, Helen.
Well, yes, they needed to come and inspect me and, well, inspect the collection and also have a look at my record keeping, because obviously everything in the collection's got to have a provenance. You've got to know where it's come from. It's also got to, they've got to know that you are actually growing the snowdrop that you say you're growing. So there's a lot of checking with various databases to make sure that it is the correct one. Luckily, Plant Heritage have got an excellent plant database called Persephone. So as well as all my own record keeping, I keep an awful lot of spreadsheets. I can use Persephone as well. And there you can put any information that you would like in there. So if you want to know, you know, its history, where it came from, who found it or who bred it, you can keep all that information, all the information about what colour it is, whether it's scented, how it grows, where it likes to grow. And also you can keep a whole range of photographs in there as reference material. And it's great because other people can then request to have a look at that. So it's a great database for people to do research from. I was incredibly proud to be granted National Plant Collection. Yeah, it's for horticultural purposes. So from my point of view, it's making sure that it's a snowdrop that grows well, it's growing in the right place, and it's worthy of being in a garden, that it's not one that people will be disappointed with, that they'll buy a snowdrop, they'll plant it in the garden and it'll just instantly disappear. So everything that I've got here, I've tested before it's actually got into the collection. So although we've got 550 into the collection, there's another 50 or so sort of waiting in the wings, and we're growing those on, making sure that they are happy to be grown where we live.
It's wonderful to have a national collection in Scotland, and we'll come on and talk in a little bit about how people can come and see that. But I wanted to ask you, how much time then, Helen, do you spend tending to your national collection of snowdrops?
Round about this time of year, obviously we've mentioned we've got visitors coming round. So we also get quite a lot of emails and phone calls asking snowdrops, because when they're out in the garden and people see them, it obviously triggers something. And so we get an awful lot of contact at this time of year. And I go around and sort of do an inventory of all the snowdrops, make sure that they are all still where they're supposed to be and that they're all growing well. We also have to be aware that snowdrops do need to be lifted and split on a regular basis. So as part of my inventory, I'll note any clumps that are looking congested or overgrown, looking out for diseases as well, or any pest damage. And I'll keep all that information. And then I'll sort of try and forget about it until July. So the last snowdrop will probably finish flowering at the beginning of May that we have. We've got a couple of really late ones. So then I'll try and forget about it till July, at which point all the snowdrops will be dormant. Then I'll get my list and then I'll go around and I'll start digging up all the ones that I think have had any problems or are congested, and lifting and dividing them, putting them elsewhere, moving them around, checking them over. And then I try and forget about them again until September. And then September's when our first one pops its head up and sort of reminds me, hey, I'm here. So yeah, it seems to be in fits and starts. So, you know, there's sort of three main year, parts of the year where we're actually doing things.
But then you've got snowdrops in bloom from September through to May.
Yes, that's right, yeah. Still down to the species.
And that's probably little known to most listeners, because they would associate snowdrop as being a very, very late winter, early spring bloom.
We start in September with one that's a Reginae olgi, which originally they come from Greece. They're still naturalised in Greece, and they're an autumn flowering snowdrop. So they're the first one that comes into flower here. And then the last one, we have a couple of hybrids, and so they will sort of take us end of April into the beginning of May.
So you open your garden under Scotland's Garden Scheme to come and see your snowdrop collection. When is that open from then, and when would be the best time for people to come to see your garden?
The snowdrops open on the 3rd of February and we finish on the 17th of March. I would say the best time to actually come and see the snowdrops is probably the 3rd or 4th week in February into the 1st or 2nd week in March. That sort of month window is when there's the most out in the garden, and also that you've got nice sunny days where the flowers will open, because quite often they'll sit there with the flowers closed, and so people don't get the benefit of what they actually look like when the flowers are open. And we also open again in the summer, where occasionally people will walk around and they'll see our labels for the snowdrops and ask what they are, but a lot of the collection is hidden amongst herbaceous planting and shrubs and trees and things. And that's on the 30th of June this year.
That's really nice for people to be able to perhaps visit twice, to come during snowdrop season and see the highlight of your snowdrop growing, and then come back in the summertime and see what the garden looks like when the snowdrops are not quite so floriferous.
Yes, people do come at both times, and it's quite nice because they come around and say, it's so different. You wouldn't know that the snowdrops were there, and vice versa. It's like they come and see the snowdrops and they say, where's all the herbaceous plants disappeared to? Obviously, they're all hiding under the ground. So people do get a totally different perspective.
So we'll come on in a minute then to talk about the rest of your garden, Helen, and what's there apart from snowdrops. But it would be a bit remiss to not talk about the fact that snowdrop collectors now pay big, big money for snowdrops. Why do you think snowdrops fetch such a price?
I don't know why people pay so much for them, but I can see why they do. I can understand, you know, if people get obsessed by them, people want the first of a particular breeding that comes out. And we know that snowdrop breeders, they take years, if not decades, to develop these new snowdrops. And when they bring something to the market, it's usually something completely different than ones that have been bred before. So we know they've taken an awful lot of time and effort in this. And so when they release something that is completely different, a lot of people want that first snowdrop that is completely different to be in their collection. I can understand why they do it. Yeah, it is a funny one, really.
Because the current record for snowdrops is the one that went for £1,850, and that was the Golden Tears one. But like you said, that was 18 years of hard work and breeding to get that snowdrop ready for that market.
I admire them so much because I am not that dedicated and I don't think I've got the patience. When we have rogue seedlings, or in fact, to keep our collection true, we actually go around at the end of the season and we pull off all the seed pods so that they don't self-seed into the clump. And I scatter them in a small copse that we've got here and in down the wildflower meadow. And I have these great aspirations that one day I'll walk out and there'll be something completely new. I'll have crossed all on its own and done something, but that's highly unlikely. These people who put new ones to the market actually do very specific crosses because they know what they're looking for. So the chances of me getting something really unique, quite minimal probably.
Well, you don't know. So what is the most that you've ever paid for a snowdrop? Or maybe more interestingly, how much would you pay? How high would you be prepared to go then for a really desired snowdrop?
Well, I think I'm getting quite grippy in my old age. So I don't pay. Yeah, when the new ones come out, it'll be several years before they'll come down in price enough that I'll pay for them. But there was one snowdrop that really grabbed my interest, and it's quite a famous one that people who are into snowdrops will know about, called Green Mile. And it was discovered in Belgium, and the people who discovered it actually named their nursery after the snowdrop, rather than the other way around. The snowdrop wasn't named after the nursery. And we actually paid £500 for that.
Wow.
And at the time, I thought I needed my bumps felt. But it was just something about it really caught my interest. And so you won't be surprised to know that I actually now grow several clumps of it around the garden because I'm so scared of losing it.
Oh, yeah.
So, but it is a gorgeous snowdrop. It's a Novalis and it's more or less pure green. So it looks completely different. And that's probably why they found it. It stood out against all the other common snowdrops that were in their woodland there. But it's just one of those snowdrops. I just love it. So, yeah, I don't want to lose it.
Well, and you won't want to be paying £500 anytime soon for any more snowdrops.
No. Well, that's it. Yeah. So, no, not to be repeated. That's the one and only time we've gone mad and done that.
And you sell snowdrops as well, don't you? People can buy from you at kind of all different price ranges, but yours don't go up to £500, or do they?
No, they don't. The likes of Green Mile, that's a keeper. Occasionally we will sell one or two because a lot of people want it. And so I have had my arm twisted and I've sold a couple over the years. But yeah, they range from literally you can buy a whole big pot full for about £8. You know, I think the most expensive one we sell is about £100. But again, they're one-offs. Because I think once it gets to that price, I'm so afraid of losing them. I don't want to be too vigorous in splitting them and selling them.
Well, that's good husbandry, isn't it, to keep your collection alive and thriving?
Yeah, that's it.
Well, you've got a ways to go then to beat the Scottish record of £725 for the one found in a Perthshire garden, the Galanthus, the Elizabeth Harrison, the Woronowaya one, the Elizabeth Harrison one. So that was £725 that Thompson and Morgan paid for that. That was back in 2012.
Yeah, and that's a lovely snowdrop. I can see, again, that was another one that really stood out as being completely different. I do believe Thompson and Morgan actually lost it, sadly.
So would that be an ambition to try and grow something or to discover something in your garden? Maybe they might crossbreed and you might discover something that's completely unique and goes for a whopping price.
Well, that's it. When I'm walking through the woodland with the dogs, and so I think I've just got my eye to the ground. You just never know when something. But yeah, like I say, anything that's a bit rogue or that we've crossed, we have done a couple of deliberate crosses. But it takes about 4 or 5 years before they flower. I just haven't got the patience, so they've been put in the copse to join all the others. And one day something, you know, unusual may pop up.
Well, that's something to look forward to, isn't it? And as you say, something to look for every single time you're out walking there. So out with snowdrop season then, tell us a little bit about your garden, Helen. What else do you have growing in your garden?
Well, we've got about 3/4 of an acre is actual garden. And then down below the main garden, we've got an acre that's a wildflower meadow. We started planting a wild copse about 10 years ago. If we can keep the deer from eating it, hopefully one day it will be a nice wildlife woodland. Most of the garden wraps around the house, and there's a lot of herbaceous planting. There's quite a few shrubs. It's a typical country cottage garden, I would say. It's a real mixture, and we've got the usual veggie plot or kitchen garden. You know, we've got a polytunnel where we grow less hardy vegetables, because again, we're in the northeast of Scotland. So if we want things like melons and sweet corn, tomatoes, things like that, we grow them all in the polytunnel. And we've got a lovely wildlife pond. We get otters in there, which is wonderful. In the past, we've had mink. And I think I'm probably a bit double standards here. Don't like the mink, but love the otters. They both eat the fish regardless. But and lots of trees and hedgerows. When we first moved here, it was a blank canvas. It was just a derelict croft in the middle of a field. So when people come and visit the garden, all the trees and hedges and shrubs and everything you see here, what we've planted, nothing's from before the garden.
I'm not going to ask you to pick your favourite plants in the garden, Helen, but if you could only have 3 plants in your garden, which 3 plants would you have and why? And it's such an interesting question.
Well, the first one's got to be a snowdrop.
I'd be surprised if it wasn't.
I'll narrow it down. It's actually one called Mrs. McNamara. Now, she's not green or yellow or striped or anything fancy, but she's got the most wonderful perfume. So if you're not superstitious and you're happy to pluck a couple of flowers and bring them into the house, it just smells wonderful, fills the whole room with perfume. So that's one I would definitely pick. A second plant I couldn't do without are the witch hazels. So because they are such wonderful backdrop to the snowdrops in winter. And again, I just love scented plants. That's another one that I couldn't do without. So just love those. Thirdly, I would say hardy geraniums, because they're probably a close second to snowdrops in the amount of varieties I've got. And I think they're just fantastic plants because you've got everything from really tall ones up to about 3 foot to lovely ground cover. And for me, it's great because I can plant lots and lots of different snowdrops around the garden. And then in the summer, they completely disappear because there's this carpet of different hardy geraniums.
Yeah, so that's nice to get that synergy in the garden, so they'll work well together. That'd be a nice garden to be in if you only had snowdrops, witch hazel and hardy geraniums. You would have colour all year round, pretty much.
Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah.
Nice. So as well as all your gardening, Helen, and your snowdrop collection and all the work that takes to look after it, by day you are an environmental sustainability advisor. So what does that involve, and does that allow you to bring that knowledge to the garden, or is it all of your years of gardening that informs your practice in the environmental sustainability work?
My job actually entails sort of measuring the carbon footprint of the companies. And once we actually see where their emissions are coming from, we can then suggest reductions for them. And then at the end of the day, if it's a manufacturing company or something like that, where you can't get rid of all your emissions completely, then we will look at reliable sort of schemes for offsetting those, for carbon offsets. And I'm sort of very passionate about that, because there's a lot of schemes out there sort of promising the earth for carbon offsetting. So it's finding ones that are reliable. That's my passion at the moment. And I do bring it to the garden, so we're peat free here. I don't use electricity or any kind of paraffin or anything like that for sort of heating the greenhouses, and try and keep my carbon footprint here as low as possible. Like I say, we sell snowdrops, so all our packaging's, it's either reused or it's recycled cardboard. We've got a couple of local businesses that have too much packaging from what they buy in, so I take it off their hands and I reuse it all for sending my snowdrops out. So it's just little things like that sort of helping my carbon footprint as well.
Yeah, and if everyone did something small, it's amazing the collective difference it makes when looked at then en masse.
Definitely, everybody just doing their own little bit really contributes a lot.
Well, that's nice that your day job and your passion can marry together very nicely.
Yeah, it works out quite well, really. I think I've always been interested in the environment. I think from moving up here in the first place, to a certain extent, was to be sustainable, self-sufficient, lead that kind of life. And so, yeah, it's something that's always interested me.
So, what would be then the best piece of advice you could give to new gardeners, Helen, given all your experience, or to people who have decided that this is the year, their New Year's resolution, they're going to get out and start gardening? What would be the best advice you'd give them?
One thing I would suggest to people is when you go out and you buy all your new plants and they've got all these wonderful labels in them, I see lots of people stick them next to the plant in the garden. And if their gardens are anything like mine, the blackbirds come along the next day and pull them all out and you lose them. And then they can never remember what that plant is. So I'd say instead of sticking those labels in your border, stick them in a scrapbook. You can be organized and have different pages for different parts of your garden. But even if you think, I'll never remember, you will. You'll go out to the garden and you'll see a blue hardy geranium. You'll go to your scrapbook and there it is. There's the label for it. And you can say, oh, that's it. That's the one. It's a really good way of remembering what you've got in your garden for the future.
That's great advice, Helen. That's really, really good because, as you see, people are full of enthusiasm. They're dying to get out there and do things. And then small things like that, losing your plant label can often lead to massive disappointment then because someone thinks, well, I can't remember how to care for it. I can't remember what to do with it. I don't know what it's called, so I can't look it up.
And you may think, actually, I want to go and buy more of those, but you can't remember the name, so that's it.
And then what about advice for people specifically looking to start growing snowdrops? Maybe they've been inspired by listening to you and they think, right, I'm going to start my own snowdrop collection here.
Have a look for something that's completely different. If you've already got the common snowdrop in your own garden, look online for something that's a bit taller. Something like S. Arnott or James Backhouse or any of the old classic snowdrops, because you put them in your garden, and when they come up next year, you're going to see that's the snowdrop that I bought because it's so completely different to the other one. And also have a think. I know when people come around my garden, some people really don't like the yellows. They probably think they look a bit weak because they should be green. You know, green's associated with healthy. But yeah, have a look at snowdrops. Perhaps see what appeals to you. There's pure white ones, there's yellow ones, there's green ones. You can even get ones now with variegated foliage. So have a look and, decide, well, they're the ones that I'm going to go for. Something a bit different.
And would you have any specific care advice for people then growing snowdrops?
There's two things that we find really useful here, and I'm not suggesting everybody does this, but we find it very helpful. We plant all our snowdrops in aquatic pond baskets. Because we're in the middle of the countryside, we get bothered a lot with moles and bank voles and also just generally mice, and they go burrowing through the borders and tip them all up onto the surface, and then they move around and you lose them. And so if you definitely want that snowdrop to stay put where you plant it, it's quite handy if you plant it in a basket. You can get bulb baskets as well, but the aquatic pond baskets are just that little bit cheaper and a little bit deeper as well. And also, don't plant them anywhere that's too wet. If anything, it's better to plant your snowdrops where it's a bit drier and free draining. They'll thank you for it. They'll move around to a certain extent. If you plant them too deep, you'll find that they'll migrate towards the surface and vice versa. If you plant them too shallow, they're amazing plants. Next year, they'll be a couple of inches deeper if that's what they like. But people associate them with damp ground, but they don't necessarily like that, and they will rot away. They'll sort of, they'll dwindle away and they won't thank you for that. So if anything, if you've got a bit that's a bit free draining, that's the best place to plant them.
That's great advice for anyone considering a snowdrop collection or even just getting one or two varieties in to start out with. Thank you so very much, Helen, for your time today and for sharing all of your snowdrop knowledge. And I would certainly encourage people to try and get along to your garden to see your wonderful collection open under Scotland's Garden Scheme. And then to go back in the summertime and see what the garden looks like when there are no snowdrops there.
I won't bore them too much with my snowdrop talk.
But I think that's what people want. They want to come and they want to hear from you, don't they?
Yeah, well, I do. I think people come for a quick visit and then an hour and a half later, we're still talking about snowdrops.
But you enjoy that, don't you? Opening under Scotland's Garden Scheme, and that's part of the joy, is not just showing your garden, but it's talking to people about it.
Very much so. I love talking to people about plants, and I think it's, I really enjoy it actually when people come back for a second year or a third year or even fourth year. And they sort of say, you know, they maybe bought something from our plant stall and they've planted it and they'll tell me how it's done. And then they'll come and ask me for advice. And yeah, my own advice of keeping labels in books comes in very handy because people will wander around the garden and say, what is that plant? So it's quite handy to have the labels available. And yeah, that's the best part of opening the gardens. We're open for about 5 hours in the summer, and I'll get to the end of our open day and I think, where's the time gone? And it's just because we've been chatting so much with everybody.
Gardeners are so willing to share their knowledge, so it's wonderful that you do that, as it is all the other gardeners across Scotland who open their gardens. It's just a fantastic resource for us all to have.
Oh, it definitely is. Yeah, if you want to know what grows in your area, definitely go to one of the Scotland's Garden Schemes gardens that open throughout the year, because they're font of knowledge and they have all the plants that grow well in your area.
Absolutely. Well, Helen, thank you so very much for your time this morning. Best of luck with this year's snowdrop collection, and I will be closely following to see if you discover anything new in your garden or anything which you're selling for a record-breaking price.
Watch this space, you never know.
You never know.
Thanks very much for inviting me along.
Don't forget to follow us on social media by searching for Scotland Grows across Facebook, Instagram or LinkedIn, and sign up for our mailing list at scotlandgrowsmagazine.com so you never miss an episode of the Scotland Grows Show. And if you are not yet subscribed to receive Scotland Grows Magazine 6 times a year straight to your inbox, literally packed with Scottish gardening goodness, then be sure to do so as soon as possible, and you'll even get access to all the back issues. Details can be found on our website at scotlandgrowsmagazine.com, across our social media feeds, and in the show notes for this episode. The information on the National Trust for Scotland's Roots subscription is also in the show notes, and they would appreciate your support to help National Trust for Scotland's gardens and designed landscapes thrive. I look forward to you joining me on the next episode of the Scotland Grows Show, as we celebrate Scottish gardening.